Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 6 of the Confused Breakfast Podcast. Do you remember the pure joy and excitement of a trip to the local movie store as a young kid? The excitement of walking up and down the aisles, browsing the names and the artwork, and finally deciding on the movie you were going to take home with you? Yes, it's hard to beat the ease of the modern era and streaming platforms where you don't even have to get off your couch, but there was something truly special about making that trip as a child, picking a movie out by hand, and falling in love with it when you got home. Alone. On this podcast, we revisit and dissect some of our favorite childhood movies from the movie rental store era to see if they still hold up. I'm your host, Mike Schulte, and joining me as always, Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern lookalikes, Sean Breyer and AJ Vans. How the heck are you?
What's it going to be?
Who's who?
I hate that this is the, I think I'm probably Joe Pesci though.
wait, who's shorter?
I am Sean Shorter.
Well, then there you go.
Hey,
that's
right.
The number one
I'm
attribute of
those. Yeah. I'm an Oscar winner. It's fine.
I'm Joe Pesci.
I'm Daniel Stern.
It's pretty spot on.
There we go.
Yeah, impersonations.
That's why we're on the show, Mike.
Well, that's why I asked you to be here. Well, first I want to tell you about another review. The reviews are flying in. I thought we'd have to make them up as we went, but
somebody stop them.
Somebody stop giving us reviews. Keep going, please. We need more.
Please.
Review time.
This week's review is from Name Butt Sauceman. Is their username Butt Sauceman?
Butt Sauceman, yeah.
MON, Butt Sauceman.
Is it all one word?
Yeah, Butt Sauceman.
Okay,
but capital on each of the words.
Okay. Right.
Butt Sauceman.
Yeah, okay, Sean, you're going to love this.
It's awesome.
Okay, so it's called Sean is My Favorite.
Oh, man.
No, I'm serious. It says sensitive, dark, and mysterious, not afraid to stand up for what he believes in. Mike and AJ are okay, but Sean, ellipses, the best. Call me.
Oh, no.
That's what it says.
Oh, yeah.
Go on Apple Podcast and read it.
Wow.
Butt Sauceman.
Butt Sauceman.
I'll give my phone out right now. I don't care. I'm so lonely.
Dude.
Does that attract you?
But let's at least put this. That was a 5-star review.
Wow.
Hey, thank you.
And we are very happy of that. And I'm telling you, 5-star reviews are so important, not only for our amusement, because we like reading these. But if you can get on Facebook or your favorite podcast platform and leave us a good review, like, we're going to read it on the air. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Season of giving. All we want for Christmas is 5-star reviews.
I'm fulfilled. I don't know about you guys.
Well, if there's three things that Sean loves, it's butts, sauce, and men.
Yeah.
So.
No, mun, M-O-N.
Mon.
Mon.
Well, mon. Mon. I mean, I like Jamaican men.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Mondays are, you know, they're
Mondays.
Today.
God, I hate Mondays.
I fucking hate Mondays. But if you throw a little sauce and some butts in there,
nobody's perfect, Sean.
I'll put a Monday. Put a Monday in the whole top of the line.
Okay,
stop.
Of the week. There, I'll put them in there. We good?
We're good now.
Should I stop?
Moving along.
We got it.
Edit this out. That is for my record. So it's officially Christmas season now, and it feels damn good. I mean, we are getting damn close to that amazing holiday of Christmas. We teased it on the big episode, but I think this is a cool topic that I think everybody can relate to. Toys that you always wanted, but you never got for Christmas. Because I think we are all there.
Yeah.
Unless you come from a super rich family where you just got whatever you wanted,
yeah.
Which I know we all did not.
No.
There was always that one specific toy that, like, you want. You got the JCPenney toy catalog.
Yes.
And, like, that's nostalgia overload for me. Is thinking about looking through that amazing catalog and all these toys and the prices, and you'd circle them and you'd give them to your parents and be like, give that to Santa Claus.
I remember how big my list got because of those catalogs.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, looking back, just how absolutely, like, unreal. Like, it's just like there's no way I would have gotten like
every
third
one of them.
Like a quarter of
but
that,
you had to, you had to, you knew that you weren't going to get them all, so you at least had to throw a bunch on
yeah
there.
You got to cast a wide net.
Correct.
Overload
it's,
it
it's yeah. a funnel you
yeah
know?
You're right
even today, you know, I just put out a ridiculous amount of things for people to get you and
yeah.
see what you get.
Yeah, it's like Tinder, right?
It's
very much like Tinder.
Yeah, man.
I remember from, I'll tell you what mine was. I mean, yeah. This is clear as day. It was an RC Tyco. It was called the RC Tyco Typhoon.
Okay.
And it was a hovercraft. It was a remote control hovercraft.
Oh.
And it could go on land or water. Like it just went on land and water. So it just had the air tube around it and it kind of floated on thing. And dude, I had this mental image that I was going to take it to this park near us. that had like a playground next to it and a field, and then it had a lake, and I was just going to show off, and I was going to be like, look, I'm driving in a remote control car. Oh, wait, it's on water. Now it's flying around in the water. Now it's up. I had this mental image that I was just going to do that, and I was going to be so cool, and I asked for it every year, and I never got it. And I did look it up. It's still like available. You know, it's like kid toys from the 80s, and it's like, these things suck. They never worked right. They broke on the first day. I'm like, well, thank God.
They sell them at truck stops now. You're just like, what? This is prestigious material.
Exactly. What do you remember? Do you remember the toy that you guys always wanted?
For me, it was a, cause I remember one year, like wanting a skateboard, like really, really bad, but I wanted a specific one. And I got like the knockoff, obviously, or like the Walgreens version of it. But maybe disturbingly, I wanted a gun.
A gun?
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing.
I wanted a six shooter revolver.
Like a real one?
My friend had, and we were kids, my friend had like a legit gun that was a real gun, and like it was, the barrel was welded, and like it could never shoot.
Okay, no, I know what you're talking about. Fire totally.
It was just like a, you know, like a prop gun pretty much, but I thought it was so badass, and I was so into guns. I'm like, can I get one of those? And my mom was just like, I let you out of the house way too much and let you out way too late for you to bring that out of the house. You will die. Yeah. You will get shot by a real gun. So I never got it.
What about you, AJ?
I have two.
Okay.
I have two that came to mind. And so the first one, it was a toy. I don't know if you guys would remember these. It was a toy. There was one toy, it's called Technozoids. They're called Zoids, and their tagline.
I remember Zoids, yeah.
Zoids, but they had these. They were these models that you built, and then they powered up, and they would move around, and they'd be like remote control.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're called Technozoids, and their tagline was, you don't just build them, you bring them to life. And I thought it was the coolest thing. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, I need to have these.
Marketing geniuses.
Yeah.
Back
and
then.
I was just like, and it was all rock and roll and fire and lava and all this cool stuff that these gorillas and Tyrannosaurus Rexes were stomping through. And you're just like, oh, I want that.
Never got it.
But then I also, my other thing was, I really wanted a Power Wheels.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wanted Power Wheels. I wanted my own car. Now, here's the reason I wanted it, okay? I always thought kids were super stupid. They were like, you know how kids are, oh, yeah, you want to go on a date? Like, we'll go on a date. Like, I had friends who said, yeah, we went on a date. I was like, well, how'd you get there? And it's like, you can't drive. You have to have your mom take you or something. I thought that was lame. I was like, well, if I had a Power Wheels, I could go get a date. And
Didn't get one.
I could totally just go and like drive it down to her house. Then we could go to the movies or something. And just like,
you explained to your parents that that's why you wanted it.
Yeah,
that's why you didn't get it.
That's, you're not getting that.
All them ladies in the box, they're just like, AJ Vince, he drives.
He drives. That's right. In line for the super loops.
We just tie this all back together, aren't we? I think our parents were pretty smart. Looking back, like that hovercraft had terrible reviews. Yeah. So my parents were pretty smart on that. Looking back, yes, you shouldn't have had a gun, Sean.
You're probably
and
right.
AJ, you shouldn't be dating.
You shouldn't be dating.
You just got married, okay?
At 8 years old. Oh, yeah.
Congratulations, by the way, buddy. Say it officially on the show.
Hey, all right.
In case you were wondering from the last episode, AJ was the one that got married.
I did. Thank you.
Our parents knew what was best for us.
It's true.
Well, and speaking of things that you wished for Christmas, the main character of our movie actually got what he wished for. You like that? It's time to introduce our movie of the episode, one of the all-time best Christmas movies, 1990 smash hit that spawned four sequels, you guys.
Yeah. And there are four?
Apparently one in the making right now.
Jesus.
I'm, of course, talking about Home Alone.
Hey-o.
So, Sean, let's hear what you got. Hook us up with the scene. How
sure
did
you
this
can
movie
handle
get
this?
Made? I think so.
Okay. Home Alone, 1990. Listen, everybody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Written by John Hughes. Directed by Chris Columbus. Director of photography, Julio Macat. Music by fucking John Williams. Stunts. I got the stunt man on here in particularly. Troy Brown, he wasn't the coordinator or anything, but I wanted to include him in this rundown because he's really important. And the cast, Macaulay Culkin as titular Kevin McAllister, Catherine O'Hara, John Hurd, Joe Pesci, Daniel Stern, Roberts Blossom, you know, John Candy, in a really, really small role. I mean, we'll get to him.
Yeah.
But so John Hughes pretty much wrote this movie for Chris Columbus. After defining the 80s, pretty much. He was inspired by the scene in Uncle Buck of Macaulay Culkin, because he's in Uncle Buck as well, interrogating John Candy in that movie, and he really liked his charisma that much that he inspired him to write a character like that to lead an entire movie. So that's how he came up with the idea, was pretty much spawned off of Macaulay Culkin.
That's amazing.
I loved him in Uncle Buck. Yeah. It was so perfect.
I love that movie. We're gonna cover that sometime.
Yes, we will.
Oh yeah.
Columbus, as opposed to, you know, discovering America as well, Columbus was supposed to direct National Lampoon's Xmas Vacation.
Right.
Also written by Hughes. And
wow.
Yeah, like, they were signed by the same agent, and they were, like, they just loved each other's work so much. It was, like, a completely just flourishing collaborative kind of duo that they were. They just, like, I wrote this for you, you direct it. I wrote this for you, you direct it. They just kind of did that for each other. But yeah, he was supposed to, Columbus is supposed to direct Xmas Vacation, also written by Hughes. Chris and Chevy Chase did not get along whatsoever, because apparently Chevy Chase is a
no one gets along with Chevy Chase.
No one does.
He backed out eventually. He directed some second unit on it, which is made it into some of the movie. But that's about it on Christmas Vacation. So John Hughes felt kind of bad for him and wanted to give him this movie. And so he did. WB was initially going to buy the project. They offered $14 million, but the producers thought they needed 14.7, and they just were not budging on it. And what a huge, huge, I emphasize huge, fucking mistake that was on Warner Brothers.
Yeah,
20th Century Fox swept in, and as opposed to a big kind of like disagreement fight with the budget, 20th Century Fox was just kind of like, yeah, we don't have a Christmas movie this year. Let's just do it.
Let's do it.
So they gave him $17 million to make this movie.
Okay.
Culkin was cast based off his role in Uncle Buck, as I said. Columbus wanted to do his directing duty, actually, and asked John Hughes if he could. He kind of knew. He knew the story of Macaulay Culkin inspiring pretty much the script. But he wanted to do his directing diligence.
Of course.
And so he interviewed and auditioned 200 plus kids at least, but also ultimately, obviously, landing on Macaulay Culkin, who was just charmed everybody and was just perfect for the role. Culkin's dad is actually a pretty overbearing dickhead and wouldn't let them hire Macaulay Culkin if they didn't hire his brother Kieran Culkin, who plays his cousin in the film
Fuller,
which is really weird. And he's, but he's actually good in it. He's actually like a cute kid in it.
Fuller.
If he drinks too much pop, he farts or some shit.
He wets the bed, bro.
That look he gives. Robert De Niro, Danny DeVito, Chris Lloyd, John Lovitz, among many considered for the roles of any of the Wet Bandits. Robert De Niro turned it down, obviously, but having a huge working relationship with Joe Pesci. Daniel Stern wanted the role so badly because he loved the physical comedy aspect of it. He thought that was going away in movies. And we're all the better for it, because I think he's one of the best parts of the movie. Like, Joe Pesci, Joe Pesci is like probably the best actor. I mean, he is the best actor in the entire film. But Daniel Stern, to me, is just like the standout, like Three Stooges, you know, aspect of the movie. Did you guys know that Daniel Stern also did the voiceover for The Wonder Years?
That was Daniel Stern.
Wow, yeah. I did not know that.
I did not know that either.
Knowledge bombs.
Yeah.
Boom.
Here we go. Columbus was a huge fan of Pesci, and particularly his comedy bits in Raging Bull, believe it or not. Pesci and Stern were already pretty good friends. They did a movie before this together that their scenes got cut out of, but once they got on set and realized that they were cast with each other, they were pretty happy about it. The film was number one grossing comedy of all time until The Hangover 2, which is not that long ago.
No, wow. No.
12 weeks at number one. And in fact, it was so it maintained that momentum for 12 weeks that Chris Columbus did his next movie, and it came out and Home Alone was still number one.
That's amazing.
Can you fucking believe that? His new movie that he made after Home Alone got blown out of the water by his previous movie, probably a year and a half before.
Good God.
Can't believe it. Well, so, I mean, obviously well-received, one of the best Christmas movies of all time.
Yeah, there was a couple other things I saw that it won 11 out of 16 nominations after it came out in multiple things, including Oscar nomination for Best Song and Best Score.
Oh, wow, cool.
Golden Globes nomination for Best Picture, Comedy, and Best Actor. One of the ones they did win, of course, Kids' Choice Awards, favorite movie. Like, I mean, that
just the best movie of all time.
Here you go. We're just going to not have this category anymore. You won. Well, let's talk about the first time when you saw the movie. AJ, do you remember the first time you saw this thing?
I was very young. All the jokes went so far. Like, it was a lot of it was just so far over my head. I remember that. Like, I can't give you a distinct time, but I remember watching it as a kid, per se, you know? And every single joke, like, for some reason, like, when I watched this again as we were prepping for this, I had these, like, little blips that kept popping up, like, oh, my God, oh, my God. Like, when he's shooting the little figurines out of the laundry chute.
Oh, yeah.
Why did that hit me? When he's climbing up the shelves, why did that hit me?
Yeah.
All these little things. And you're just like, like I say, when I was a kid, like, I just got to watch movies on TV whenever they came around. And, like, we did rent this from Adventureland Video.
Yep.
I know that. I know that for a fact. But I don't know. I think those are the things. That's what really takes me back about this movie is the way I felt when I started rewatching it, and I got all these little tiny blips that happened again.
You remembered seeing that scene for the first time.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, really strange, honestly. Because honestly, Home Alone was one of those that I didn't rewatch it a ton. I always rewatched Home Alone 2.
Okay.
Because that was like, that's what happened.
It came out when you were a little older, so that was your movie.
So that was more like, that hit me harder. So, but Home Alone, I remember watching it, but I remember also being really scared at points.
Yeah.
Like, there are some really spooky moments in this. Like, when the pizza kid shows up the second time and he's, like, got the TV going. That's scary.
Kind of scary, dude.
I don't know. Lots of things like that. And that's what I remember. Like, I remember the takeaway for that. And like I say, most of this is probably with I think this is one of those that I actually specifically remember watching with my brother David. That I remember him showing me this movie.
I was eight, so I think like we specifically rented this movie from the movie store. That was like you heard about it, you saw commercials, you ran through the store, picked up your VHS copy to take home to rent. And I mean, I don't know if we ever owned this movie, strangely enough, but I think we rented it anytime the holidays were near, up until the spot where you could start, you know, watching it on TV and stuff like that. But I specifically remember the first time we rented that a movie. What about you, Sean?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is one of the first movies that we actually owned on VHS. This and the sequel, honestly, and that's probably how I first watched them. And like AJ was saying, watching the second one a little bit more than the first one, I probably did that too, just because we were having a conversation earlier. That I bleed some of the details in the second one over to the first one and vice versa. Like, they're just kind of like the same movie to me when I think the first one is obviously way more superior, but I think the second one is like just as good and just as entertaining. But probably VHS around eight or nine, somewhere around
there. What's the initial rating when you were a kid, when you first saw this, AJ?
Oh man. When I first saw this one, I was probably at like a 6.5.
Okay, 6.5.
Yeah.
Just like, okay, cool. Good movie, but I also don't understand it.
Yeah, because I was too young, and I think I didn't quite resonate, you know? And I was just like, this is funny because it has that slapstick humor and the screams. And
tripping over micro machines. Right. Like, that's all I want to see.
You know, and like stuff like that. But I was like, oh, yeah, he lit his head on fire. And, like that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, oh, that's really funny. It's like, that's not funny. That's terrifying.
You could get hurt, kid.
That was what it was. It's just like the screams, the shock value, the slapstick. So, yeah, but that's what kept me into it. So it's like a six.
This is the ultimate kid power movie for me. I was I'm like the same age as Macaulay Culkin. So was like, man, I could do that too. Like kids rule. And then you throw in Christmas theme. Like, I mean, I was in love with this from day one. I was a 10. Like, there was no better movie than this when I first saw this, for sure.
I'm going solid 7, probably.
Yep.
6.5 out of 7, or 6.2 to a 7. Yeah, I just knew that I liked it. Like AJ was saying, like, how can you not like all the slapstick bullshit in it? And Macaulay Culkin kind of just embodying whatever you'd want to do when you're alone, you know? Yes,
perfectly.
Exactly.
Well, let's, I mean, before we dive into this, Sean has made it known that this is his favorite part of the episode when AJ reads reviews. So let the record state that. AJ, tell us the ratings, IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, and then get us some good reviews.
Yeah. So this is pretty, surprisingly, not like somehow still not well enough like received by some of the critics. This is 65% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Weird.
Well, much like we said, so, like I think if it's a Christmas movie, it can never go above a certain point.
Yeah,
don't you think?
Right.
Like,
yeah, it's really weird. Totally.
I figured this one would though. Like this one's just like it feels like that. Like
you feel like it kind of transcends the holiday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's why I feel about it because. Like, yeah, there's Christmas lights and other stuff like that. And, like, you know, it's the idea of, like, being, like, without your – no supervision, doing what you're going to do. I don't know. I feel like it transcends the holiday. But, yeah, 65%. Okay. That's the tomato meter. That is critical reviews, critics. But audience obviously loved it. As you said earlier, it stayed in the, like, number one for how long? Mm-hmm. And that's 80% from audiences on Rotten Tomatoes. So other than that, 6.5 IMDb. But that's the problem I have with IMDb is there's so many reviews. I've said this before. There's nearly 500,000 reviews posted on IMDb. So 6.5 from those users, right? So I on some of these, I have to think that like some people didn't even know what movie they were watching when I kind of read some of these reviews. I'm like, I don't think you know what's going on. And so, but let's start with some of the critics. TV Guide magazine.
Always reliable.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're hitting hard-hitting reliable sources here, guys.
People trust us.
TV Guide magazine. 63 out of 100. The first half of Home Alone features the sugar-coated sentimentality that can usually be found in a Hughes film, while the second half is full of unanticipated sadism.
Okay.
Whoa, that took a turn. I always love to hear Roger Ebert. He's also a 63. All plausibility is gone.
He also loves sadism. So.
If there's anyone out there. All plausibility is gone. We sit back detached to watch stuntmen and special effects guys take over a movie that promised to be the kind of story audiences could identify with. Interesting.
Sit back detached.
Well, detached from reality, I imagine. Okay. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, obviously, this is just over the top. These guys should be dead.
We're all in on the joke.
Yeah, we all, yeah.
We get it.
I'll give you some of the higher ones. The Washington Post. This holiday contender from John Hughes is too crass, too loud, and too violent to be added blithely to Christmas viewing traditions. But it is funny.
TBS, we know funny.
Yeah, that's right. That was an 80.
It sounded like it was going to go worse than that. He still gave it an 80.
I was going to say, like, boy, it started really, really dark, but they just liked the comedy out of it.
It was funny.
They just gave it to it's like, it sounds like they just gave it to it because it's John Hughes.
I love a good John Hughes flick.
Who the fuck doesn't?
Who doesn't, you know? So
I want to know if there's anybody out there who doesn't
Come on, man. You got to give us the worst one you found. Somebody hates this movie deep down within their soul.
There is a lot of people that love it, though. Like people just say Christmas favorite every year, good acting, storyline. I feel like a lot of the positive ones, they don't really know what they're talking about, though. They're just like, I love this movie. And so
they're writing this review in June because they haven't seen it in 6 months.
He slips on the ice. Yeah, I love it.
Oh, man. Like I have to believe that so and so on September 8th of 2001 watched Home Alone, you know, and there's this 10 out of 10.
Weird.
What's that?
September 8th.
So like 3 days before September 11th?
Well, yeah.
Well, that's when this review came up.
That's when this review came up.
Oh my!
It was before. Well, it was before. I know, but still, happen.
Like, okay, go
I
ahead and read
so
it.
So interested to see what this says.
I know.
Home Alone is a lovely movie, and I consider it the greatest family film ever made because of the storyline and well-developed plot.
Everything you know about family is about to change. I'm so sorry.
The actors are fantastic. Also, I'm not going to comment on it much, but my suggestion is that if you haven't seen this movie, you should. You will feel better throughout the movie.
You'll feel better.
You'll feel better about just life.
You should just watch this movie every day because you never know what the fuck's going to happen within 3 days from now. You know,
this took. I apologize, guys. This took a little bit of a dark turn.
Let's take.
And we haven't even gotten to the negative review yet.
Comedy. this might be even worse, honestly. So this did take a darker turn. I found this review and I knew I had to bring it.
I watched this movie right after my mom's funeral.
This is Boyvin 84839.
Butt Sossman?
On December 22nd of 2018. So right before Christmas.
Okay.
This movie made me extremely uneasy.
Whoa.
The two idiots have no brain and do not understand the concept of thinking. Their idiocy made me scared to further interact with others, resulting in me isolating myself from the outside world. I am indeed now home alone.
Well, can we pause this episode for a second? I just need to think about this a little.
Take a minute. We'll take a walk.
It's a little. I feel like they read Home Alone and saw like some like the trailer and then just like formed their own idea about it without actually watching the movie.
Okay, fan theory. That was Lydia from Beetlejuice.
Yes.
Just in her super
utterly alone.
Right before she plummeted off the bridge.
Oh, man. So here's one. We'll bring this back up.
Bring us back up.
Why do people want to watch this trash movie on Christmas? It's literally about a boy who tortures robbers that invaded his home. He says evaded, by the way. Wrong word. That evaded his home. Where is the Christmas spirit? Where is Santa? Nothing about this movie screams Christmas. So why is it a popular Christmas movie? It's just a 2-hour lie.
Did Elf from... The Will Ferrell character from Elf write that review?
We should boycott this movie from being a part of the Christmas season and watch other movies like The Santa Claus.
Oh!
Whoa.
Or hell, even The Nightmare Before Christmas.
What?
This is a better Christmas movie than this. Trash, trash, trash.
Wow. Three trashes.
Three trashes?
Okay, well, I mean...
He's right. He's right that Nightmare Before Christmas is a Christmas movie, though.
I mean, I agree.
Thank you.
It's also a Halloween movie.
It's fucking not, though.
I hate you. All right, well, I guess without making people wait any longer to actually get into the review of the movie,
yes,
we should.
Solid.
No longer ado. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. So the McAllister family is preparing to spend Christmas in Paris, France, gathering at Peter and Kate's home in a Chicago suburb on the night before their departure. The youngest son, Kevin, is the subject of ridicule by his older siblings, Buzz, Jeff, Megan, and Lenny. Later, Kevin accidentally ruins the family dinner after a scuffle with Buzz, resulting in him getting sent to the attic of the house as punishment, where he wishes that his family would just disappear. During the night, heavy winds damage the power lines, which causes a power outage and resets the alarm clocks, causing the family to oversleep. In the confusion and rush to get to the airport, Kevin is accidentally left home alone.
Yet again, a movie that starts off with a kid wants to be something that he's kind of not, or wants to have something that he doesn't have,
right.
Makes a wish, a storm brews, and maybe that wish comes true.
The big curse.
Come on now.
I like that. I think we can start like a Reddit feed on that. The big curse.
The big curse.
I think we're going to do that.
Well, one other thing I'm also going to start. This is the first official I'm going to make like a siren go off. And it's going to be called this is a movie where had cell phones been a thing, the movie would have never happened.
It would have never happened.
This is the first one. Six yep. episodes in. This is the first one where literally like yep. Kevin would have a cell phone and they would land and they'd be like, Kevin, what are you doing? Like, we didn't disappear. We're in Paris. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't come. Like, oh, what, Mom? I didn't know. Like,
roll yeah. credits.
You're good.
Roll
credit. You're good. Just go to Aunt Bertha's house. It's fine.
I do like how they are able to give like good reasoning as to why they can't get in touch with them. They do give some good reason. Yeah, they
overslept.
It does
work.
It all works really well. It's very quick, but it works really well. My biggest thing, I think Charlie from Santa Claus showed up and started annoying these express
the neighbor
band.
Kid.
Yeah,
he's the epitome. He's the epitome of dumb little kids.
Oh my gosh!
So did you know though? Trivia: that was one of the kids that auditioned to be Macaulay Culkin's part.
Are yeah. you serious?
And I guess they were just like, well, clearly you're not going to get the main role, but like you're really annoying. So
a lot of
just...
those kids are in the movie.
Are they really?
Yeah, yeah. For like, I'm assuming in the church with the choir, probably.
Oh yeah. yeah. Yeah, that makes that, a lot. They said, well, we brought sense. You in for this, but you're not going to get it. Right. So how about you take this role?
Because I'm sure he's such a, like, Chris Columbus, such a sweetheart. He's like, yeah, we'll put you in the movie. Here's yeah. some place for 200 kids, probably.
Right.
Well, does this man get good gas yeah, mileage? He's so four-wheel drive.
You guys four-wheel drive. Do you have this? It's like, and are they going? We're going to Orlando, but we got to pick up my grandma first down in Kansas. It's like,
but yeah. the guy's perfect, though, because you can see him. I focused on him during this, the yeah. van driver, and he's just rolling his eyes. He goes, gee, I don't know. Kid, beat it.
Come on, kid.
I'm from Chicago.
Come on, kid. What do you want me to do?
Kids are people like that, though, are real go-getters, and they get things in life. I'm telling you. Yeah. Like asking questions, going up to random people, just being like, hey, what's a van? Yeah. Is this a good gas mileage? What do you like my hat? And like going through people's shit and stuff like that. Like people like that are successful.
But clearly none of the McAllister kids like this neighborhood kid.
Yeah, no
kidding. They don't even see him.
Yeah.
Like they're so used to not even paying attention yeah. to this stupid kid that they don't even notice he's right. there.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
And by the way, I would like to know what their thought process was when they got the film developed from the camera that he snagged.
Oh, yeah.
And he just like snaps a shot in the fucking van.
No
he's like, you dick. That
it's not even a
money.
Selfie.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, cool. And he's just like, I bet that's kind of creepy. Like, why is there a picture of this van that was in my bag? Like,
wait, was he with us the entire time?
Oh my God.
He's dressed exactly like him though, which is really weird.
It does work out very like yeah. I read that they tried to fill all plot holes as best as they could to make sure that this is a very believable thing.
Yeah.
And when you start going, milk, okay, I believe it.
I think it still holds up.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's still understandable.
Because on this go around when they're having their pizza, their $10-$12 pizzas or whatever the fuck it was.
$122.50.
Yeah,
$12 plus tip.
Which 12250 is the end of my social security number, by the way.
Oh, okay.
But
changing.
No, that's the whole thing.
Okay.
I noticed this time around that a really, really fucking quick edit is when the milk gets spilled on the counter. There are a couple tickets on the counter,
right?
And their passports and stuff, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But he throws some stuff away, like napkins and stuff like that. He throws away Kevin's ticket.
Yep.
There's a really fucking quick shot of his name on a ticket, and I'm like.
Oh, wow.
And it's important because they would have given
right.
those tickets to the lady and she would have been like, we're missing someone.
Right.
Right.
And she probably would have gone down the plane and been like, hey, you're missing Kevin.
I love right. how they trusted the audience to either like just kind of the suspension of disbelief if they did notice that or just to like, holy shit, that's a really fine detail because it's really quick.
Yeah. Very quick.
Yeah,
and they could have
sure.
easily pulled someone else's out of it too. But
yeah.
It was just Kevin's.
Yeah.
The family, the McAllister family, they've got five kids, right? They all look
huge
nothing
family.
Alike.
Right.
And they all apparently are like the same age, kind of. And speaking of Michael C. Marona is Jeff.
Yeah.
And he was Pete.
Yeah.
He had just that's how the first thing he did was those Pete and Pete shorts. And then he had just started, I think, season one of Pete and Pete, and then he got cast. This was his first role.
Oh, wow, cool.
But I love Pete and Pete, so I love Michael C. Yes. I love Slackers. When he
yes,
was.
Yes.
He's a good older brother. I like
oh,
him.
Yeah.
But they look nothing alike, so that makes me believe, like, Kate was sleeping around a little bit. Like there's, I don't know. I don't buy that.
They got the matching red hair. I mean,
that's true.
Like that's the thing. Like, you know, I feel like there's got to be some foster family stuff happening here. Why, like, I don't care how much money you make. You're paying for 14, 15 people
Dude,
to
I thought,
go to Paris.
I thought when I was a kid, watching this movie, I thought they were all their kids.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, even, like, I was like, is this like a wife swap situation? What are we doing
what's
here?
What's going on here? And so I always thought that was, obviously, that's one of the biggest questions around this movie is, what did he do? Well, we had our own fan theory that this is definitely Peter McAllister, General Peter McAllister, just reliving from Lethal Weapon. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, what the hell does this guy do?
Well, time out. So that there's a meme that had been going around going like, what did Kevin's dad do to afford to take five kids to Paris, France? Well, upon rewatch, which is why we do this, right? There's a line where Peter McAllister says, no, my husband's brother transferred to Paris last summer and both of his kids are still going to school here. And I guess he missed the whole family. He's giving us all this trip to Paris for the holidays so we can be together. So Peter McAllister did not pay for these plane tickets.
He wants them to come to France. Boom.
Right. So, man, like, Peter McAllister's, like, hanging on for dear life financially. The interior of that house is garbage. I mean, it's a huge house, but it looks terrible.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing nice inside
that
house. No,
that house is fucking gigantic. I think it's the biggest house I've ever seen on the outside.
Yeah, it's amazing.
My thing is like, I did want to comment on the decor of the house that you're just like, you're like, is this what it was like? Is this 90s chic? Is that what this is? The wallpaper, the tile counters, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's like just stuff
everywhere. It was 90s nice.
90s
for sure.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Well, I just want to make sure.
And did you know, too, like, to promote a stronger Christmas vibe, pretty much everything in the house is red and green. Like, they made those changes to the decor to just give it that green carpet, red wallpaper. It's very Christmassy in that house.
Yeah. Okay.
I would be remiss to not mention the score right now, just because it's what we start off with. John Williams, obviously, maybe one of the greatest, if not the greatest, music writer for movies ever. Obviously, Star Wars, you know, everything.
All of it.
But it starts out with this theme, and to me, whenever I hear the score of Home Alone, I just think that it's Christmas music. Like, I don't like, it's, oh yeah, that's point. It's obviously now to me, like, oh yeah, that's a Home Alone theme. But to me, before I was like a film lover and dove into these kind of things, mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh yeah, that's just Christmas music. You know, it's just that synonymous. And he was actually not the original score writer for the movie. I didn't find out who it actually was, but he was hired maybe like 2 weeks before they like kind of like gave the movie to the studio to put out, because his name wasn't even on the posters yet.
Wow.
So he wrote this as he was working on another movie, and it's one of the most iconic, to me anyway, scores of all time. Like, it is just beautiful.
I will tell you this. Going through this, everything is very believable, though, about how the kids interact with each other. I'm going to say this, though. Is Kevin McAllister kind of a shithead?
He's a fucking asshole. Total.
He's a shithead, right?
Like, complete shithead.
He's a turd, man.
He's the youngest, so like, he just gets shit on all the time. So
I'm not going to say that like he is kind of justified like in his anger. Like, he is getting dumped on in this day of prep for this trip. But, like, they even make mention of, like, him being a turd before, like, this day. It's like, you're kind of a turd. He's like a little boy who cried wolf.
Yeah.
And this is his penance. Like, this is, like, you're being a turd. The whole family's here. Stop fucking it up. You're being a jerk. Like, and, like, he gets to that scuffle. By the way, I really want to try a little Nero's pizza.
Yeah, I kind of do too.
I really want to try that.
Looks good, man.
It looks like good pizza.
One of the best.
Yeah.
One of the best on-screen pizzas of all time is the sequel. Outside the limo,
yeah,
I will say, but the Frank little Nero's looks great.
It looks so good. Like, I want that for myself. So,
but on top of him being a shithead, like, if I was in trouble already and was taken upstairs by my mom, and she happened to just say, "You're going upstairs to sleep up. You're going to go sleep upstairs," and then I said, "I am upstairs, dummy." I would have got my fucking throat ripped out. The way he delivers that line is, I was like, I clasped my fucking pearls in my hands. I was just like, he's like, I am upstairs, dummy. I'm like, dude.
Ooh.
It's like you and your brother's just like,
yeah, no kidding.
You fucking dumb.
Yikes, dude.
Well, and we can't move on past scene one without starting maybe like an official Uncle Frank hate thread.
Oh, yeah.
Like Uncle Frank, the problem I have with Uncle Frank is he serves a purpose. He's that you hate him, but he never like gets what's coming to him in one or two.
Never does.
Like he never gets. So did you know this is what's crazy? Well, first of all, two facts for you. Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah.
Dude, that would have been weird. Yeah, like, I would have liked it.
It would have worked for sure. But yeah,
but this guy played it really well. But so it's rumored. It's not. We don't know this for sure. It's rumored that the original draft of the screenplay, Uncle Frank is revealed as the real villain. And he's the villain.
Oh,
like, he hired Harry and Marv to work for him.
Wow.
To rob Peter McAllister while they were gone.
No kidding.
And that he also hired them to kill Kevin. I think that's going a little further, but clearly Frank and Kevin do not get along.
Yeah.
He's a terrible person.
Oh yeah. Well, and like they're going to the airport and obviously he's Mr. Cheapskate. He's like, oh, wouldn't want to ruin your trip, Mr. Cheapskate, and like all this stuff. That is that number one or number two?
That's number one. I feel like
I think it's number one.
I'm not sure.
Either way, like
he's the shit character in both of them.
Yeah,
yes.
He is. I'm glad they brought back the same casting, by the way.
Yeah, correct.
But in this, he is like every step of the way. He's just like, oh, it's my brother's house. He'll pay for the pizza. Like when he's in the jet, like or in first class, and he's like, no, put that in your purse.
It's real crystal. I think it's real.
And the first thing he says to the stewardess when he gets on the plane is like, bring champagne.
It's free, right?
It's free. And then she brings it around. He's like, fill it up, please.
Thank you.
Trying to get all of his free money's worth.
Free fucking shit.
There's even a subtle thing that I only heard this time that I think it's when the pizza comes and he goes, I only have traveler's checks.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And he goes, it's okay, we got it. But you can hear in the background, Peter goes, you probably got the traveler's checks that don't work in France, I bet.
Oh.
Like, you can, like, hear him, like, on purpose. I mean, that's a little dig. Because they're brothers-in-law, so, right, like, yeah. They maybe don't like each other.
I bet
that
they
much,
don't.
You know? Which is why he hired someone to rob Peter McAllister while they were gone.
Yeah,
perfect
no
accomplice.
Absolutely.
He'd be first in my questioning, I tell
yeah,
you that.
No shit.
As it goes for the second one is the same movie over again in New York, but with Tim Curry. That's the only
yep.
difference.
Yeah, yeah.
And that elevates it just that much. But anyway.
Completely agreed.
Do they just... Are cops just sitting in people's foyers that just
right,
sitting
right.
there waiting for the family?
Very interesting.
Out of all these houses?
How did he get in?
Yeah.
I know he's a professional crook, but like robber, but come on. Like,
how'd he get the outfit?
That's yeah, exactly.
Very true.
So it's... I just... You know, he walked in and he lets in the pizza
yeah,
guy,
oh yeah.
doesn't he?
Because he tries to hand him, he goes, $122.50.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, no,
I don't live here. It's like, it's just like, man, like how do these people get into here? Like, I know you're the cops, quote.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People trust you.
I guess so. Like, who the fuck let you in here? You can't talk. I don't know.
Is that kind of weird? I still don't understand why he said it when Peter McAllister goes, well, you know, we got all the normal stuff, timers on our lights, locks for our doors. And he goes, you get some eggnog or something? And then he just walks away.
Yeah.
And he goes, eggnog?
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Like, I don't understand what that was.
I caught that too. And I was like, eggnog? Like, what?
You get some eggnog or something?
A couple more things before we take off on this scene is we have to mention old man Marley. Old man Marley. What a great fucking serial killer setup that is. I would watch that movie in a heartbeat. That's a great Christmas slasher movie I would watch.
And doesn't it feel like Buzz just made that up on the spot?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. He's clearly just trying to scare these guys.
Buzz is his character and the actor who plays him is fucking amazing because I laughed so hard this time around when it's him and his other brother hanging out at their cousin or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
just hanging out talking about something, probably looking at Playboys and stuff like that. And then Kevin comes up fucking immediately. He just like, it's like it's in the back of his brain that he just like somewhere in the back of Buzz's brain, Kevin is annoying him and he's just ready anytime he hears an inkling of his voice. He's just like, hey, Buzz, what's up? He's like, what do you want, puke?
He said, this is, don't you know how to knock phlegm wad?
He's like doing something else, doesn't even see him, but he has it ready to go. Like a fucking chamber.
Yeah, he's just got these backloaded, like
he really hates Kevin so much. He hates Kevin.
Later in the film too, he's really good too.
When he's got a couple good scenes.
In the hotel, he's really great. But yeah.
All right, well, let's move along. So meanwhile, Kevin wakes up to find the house completely empty and is overjoyed to find that his wish came true. He takes full advantage and does whatever he wants around the house. The rest of the family does not realize they left Kevin behind until they are already airborne. Once in Paris, his mother and father desperately try to book a flight home. Back in Chicago, Kevin finds himself scared by the appearance of the Chicago Police Department, called by his parents to check on him. A scary movie. His next door neighbor, Old Man Marley, and the appearance of the Wet Bandits, Harry Lime and Marv Merchants. That's those are their full names. Who are breaking into other vacant houses on the block?
Harry Lime is from Orson Welles' movie called The Third Man. Where they got
L Y M E.
Yes,
that's how it's spelled.
Interesting.
Never. I don't think they ever said their last names, so that's just probably from the script. But let's focus on Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern for a bit. There was a couple funny things that I read. Joe Pesci deliberately avoided Macaulay Culkin on set because he wanted Culkin to fear him, which I think that's a pretty kind of vet move.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
And he also, Joe Pesci being a very dirty, like lots of swear words type
working
man
on Scorsese movies.
Correct. He kept forgetting that he was filming a family movie. So, like during his character's onset burst, he would let F bombs fly. And so Chris Columbus advised him to say fridge and frick, and which is kind of an iconic fridge and frickin' frickin'.
He had Culkin also had a bag going around to collect money from people who were swearing around set and shit.
I bet he got a lot of money from Pesci.
Yeah. He got all his money from Pesci.
Yes, right.
Well, and I also read that Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern felt really indifferent about the movie's potential while they were shooting. So they intentionally gave these ridiculous over the top performances.
Yeah.
Which, they didn't believe it was going to be a success. So they're like, who cares? No one's going to watch this movie. But them being over the top really made the majority of the movie for me when they were on it. It works so well.
They are, like I said, like the Three Stooges. It's like we haven't it almost banked on that, though, with the trailer and everything like that. That it banked on bringing back that slapstick physical comedy that they were doing, and the whole movie builds up to this ridiculousness, and it just works so well because it's them, and they made that choice,
Yeah,
there's actually it goes around. Daniel Stern wasn't the original casting for this. He was he had conflicts of actually getting cast into this part, and there was actually parts of it shot with the. Now, the original casting escapes me. You would recognize him if you saw him.
The name's not very familiar.
The name is not familiar at all, though. And I'm just but it was actually shot but the chemistry between this guy and Pesci wasn't clicking, so that Daniel Stern eventually said, fine, I'll do it. He wanted to do it, but he couldn't because there was, I think it was either not in the budget to get him hired, or he was also doing something else at the time. But he came back around and ended up doing it, reshooting those shots and everything, and filling the void.
Oh, so weird.
At one point, we almost didn't have Daniel Stern.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Kind of like Back to the Future, huh?
That's true.
Woo!
Eric Stoltz.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a weird movie.
I know.
I have to say that I love the editing in it's kind of the scene before this, but when they're all getting up and rushing, we slept in! The editing in it is so fast paced, and with that song, it just makes it ridiculous. And I love the filmmaking in that aspect of it.
There was another thing that I saw, that the picture that Kevin finds of Buzz's girlfriend,
woof.
And he goes, woof. So it was actually, it was the art director's son that Chris Columbus thought that it'd be too mean to actually find a picture of a girl and make fun of her. Right. So they dressed up the art director's son to look like that so that they didn't feel as bad making fun of her.
And now it's offensive to people of the LGBTQ community. Yeah.
Exactly.
You can't fucking win.
We can't win. It's a great gag, though, and I like that.
It's such a good picture.
All the stuff that he... It really is. It's obvious they were making a joke at him because this kid's just making a ridiculous face.
Woof! And he throws it down.
And I love that he finds the Playboys and stuff, but then he just kind of looks. He just zips past it. He finds the firecracker. He's like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I love Buzz's trunk of
He's got
weird,
some great stuff in there.
Crunchy taters. Yes. That's the snack.
Which he eats later.
Yes.
Yes. One of my favorite things as a kid was just like, I want to go through all that shit. But then like nowadays as an adult, I'm like, I don't think I want to go through any of that.
I don't think I want to touch any of that.
Apparently, they glued together like all the pages in the Playboy. Yep. So Kevin or Macaulay didn't see any of the tits or vaginas in it. Poor guy.
Poor guy.
Well, and then this is obviously the scene where we get to see angels with filthy souls.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Which is so mind-blowing to me that was not a real movie.
I know, yeah. They
shot it just for this.
I had to look and ask and look around.
Because you kind of wanted to see it, right? Yeah, you wanted to be like, I want to watch that movie.
It's like, oh, man, this noir, like, who is he? What's this guy? Snakes coming around.
Snakes.
Again.
It's Johnny. All right, Johnny, I'm going.
All right, Johnny, I'm sorry. I'm going.
So you could, like, I bet you could point out, like, a person on the street and be like, hey, recite some of those lines for me right now. And I bet they could.
They probably could.
It's like, I mean, you filthy animal is like everywhere now, you know, it's just so synonymous. And I love that. Like the play on the title of the movie is like, I think the original title is like Angels with Dirty Faces.
Well, yeah. So it was a play on Angels with Dirty Faces, which was 1938.
James Cagney was.
Yeah.
There. Yeah. It was okay. So it was like a real movie and they were referencing
and
that.
They just kind of messed with it.
It's so funny.
Jeez.
And that does look like a legit movie.
And you've seen this movie so many times that the guy that plays Johnny in that, which I'm sorry, I don't have his name because he's not really a famous actor, but you think of him. You're like, he's got to be in all this stuff, but he's really not. The one thing I recognized that he was in is he was in Blues Brothers.
Yep, he was police like commissioner.
Police commissioner, dispatcher. Yeah. Gotcha. But that was like the only thing I recognized that I've seen. So.
Yeah, he like does that voice and that fucking laugh.
The laugh.
Oh my God, it's just like, it's so like, because you hear him talk and he's like, yo, snakes, you know, like that.
Yeah,
but then so what I'm going to give you, snakes.
Yeah, he has that laugh and she's like, where did this come from? There's a person, another person inside of you making this. It's James Cagney inside of you.
Yeah, exactly. It's cartoonish. You feel like he was in a voiceover for a crazy cartoon animal or something.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, I have to say now as an adult, maybe I don't even know how I felt about it back then, but looking at like all the ice cream and the marshmallows, the sundae he creates, not really that into it. I'm going to be honest with you guys. It's just like, I don't know how you're dealing with this right now. Like, this is such a mess. And I just thought about like that dripping ice cream box. And I was like, not really into this. I'm going to be honest with you. This is probably borderline pornographic for kiddos. Like in the snacks.
You
that
can
you
eat
get
whatever,
to
you, whatever want. You want. It's a suicide of ice cream.
Yeah, exactly. And you're just like, mix it all together and marshmallows. Why are you putting marshmallows? I'm like, weird. Like, I don't know.
Get some taste, kid.
It is exactly what I would be doing though. Like fucking running around. And like, if there was a crew with a camera right there, I would have run around and just stopped in front of the camera, looked in the lens and been like, and then ran back. You know, I would have done that shit. Yeah. And then I would have been terrified of the fucking basement.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Oh,
that's a very good point.
That furnace freaked me the fuck out when I was a kid. And it shot so well. It's like really wide angle on it. So it just looks like it's engulfing the
looks
camera.
Like demonic. And
and there's kind of a voice that you don't hear. And it doesn't say like cover.
Yes.
It like says his name.
I didn't notice that until now. Until this rewatch.
Now, the last thing I have to say is it's all about the stuff that he's going to do when there's no, you know, parents, nothing around. There's no consequences, right? And he gets that toboggan. This is one of those things that resonated so heavily for me.
Correct.
That I thought was such a bigger deal as a kid. And then, like, he rides that thing down the stairs and out the door. By the way, angle is not.
The angle will not work.
Not gonna,
he's going right into that door jam. Like, he's ruined.
Severe neck injury.
Yeah, dude, he could have done, like, a last-minute tug right out the door.
But I don't buy it. I just, like...
I didn't buy that as a kid, either.
Yeah. And then he goes down, and it's like he got the wide angle on him, like, whoa! And then at the very end, it's just like, boom. Like it's actually that's it, huh? Like, okay, I guess that was all.
Yeah, that's fucking sledding, dude.
Yeah,
I guess
kind
of sucks.
That's what happens. You're right. That is lame.
But it plays well on like a young kid mentality. Yeah. Like, do this one thing and go, yeah, that was awesome, and move on to the next.
Yep.
He immediately moved on to shooting his BB gun at the figures. You
well,
know?
I mean, it is like I said, exactly what I would have done if my parents were gone. But it is exactly what I did in quarantine too. So.
I actually just rode my.
I just got out doing that.
Tobogganed inside.
in the house with the parents there, they film Kevin at high angles to make him really really small, and really really wide angles as well. as the movie goes on, he takes a little bit more control of the camera and more control of like the house, obviously, and kind of conquering his fears, the movie's kind of about. The movie moves down, or the camera moves down, establishing him as more of a dominant, kind of taking over the lens, sort of angle to the camera, and that's a really great directing choice by Chris Columbus, I think.
For sure.
Stuff you don't notice unless you're like really, it affects you subconsciously, right?
Yeah, totally.
You don't
works.
Notice that that's happening, but it works.
Right.
Well, let's move on. So Kevin eventually transforms into the man of the house after being scared. This includes doing the laundry, going grocery shopping, self-care routines, and ordering pizza. Using this new confidence, Kevin successfully scares off the wet bandits. Meanwhile, Kate has begged her way onto a flight to Scranton from Paris. There, she can't find a flight to Chicago. Gus Polanski introduces himself
and
offers to drive her to Chicago in the back of a U-Haul with his polka band that apparently has a window in it, and they allow you to sit in the back of the... that's pretty cool.
I guess.
Maybe that was back then. But, man, I'll tell you what. I miss John Candy.
I was just going to... I literally started tearing up when he came on screen.
There's nothing that he's done that has not made me smile or laugh or just like feel good. And so maybe you can elaborate on that, but didn't he like pretty much improvise everything in that movie?
Him and Catherine O'Hara, actually, there's somewhere, because as we have to say, along with John Candy, Catherine O'Hara, who is a living legend, they were buddies in a comedy troupe in Chicago. I think it was like CSTV or something like that.
Yeah.
Like comedy or Chicago store or something like that. Some club. But they had worked together before, obviously. And most of their like interaction was improv. And even what's in the movie is improv. But a lot of what's not in the movie is somewhere else. And I want to see that so bad. Just them riffing off each other would have been so great.
Polka. AKA Kiss Me Polka, Namahushi Polka.
We were pretty big in the 70s.
And he keeps going. He keeps thinking, like, if I could say one more thing, she's going to recognize you. She never does.
He shot all of the scenes in 24 hours, apparently. Like, just like kind of just a big favor for Chris Columbus and John Hughes. And they
had just done Uncle Buck.
Yeah.
And that was successful. They're like, throw him in there.
Right. He's just going to light it up. And he does. Like, as soon as he's on screen, like I said, it's just like, oh, fuck, there he is.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love him so much. But they built the exterior, or the interior for the van scenes right outside of the airport so they could just go.
Amazing.
Right in and out of it.
Yeah. I remember I saw something that, he was supposed to show up. He did this as a favor to Chris Columbus. This guy has so many stories though about just doing like nice, generous things all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not only in the industry, but outside of it too. And like, but this was like a favor. He was going to be there for like, he was supposed to be there for like 2 hours. It ended up turning into a 24-hour
Because they just
thing.
Kept saying it'd be great to just...
Oh, just keep going, just keep going. And he just kept rolling with it. He kept going. And his paycheck on this was literally like a couple $100 like to come in and do this, more or less to cover like some of his travel expenses. That's literally all it was. Like his check is posted somewhere for being there, and he's a massive star.
especially at that point. Yeah.
My favorite subtle John Candy moment is when they're in the van and they're playing Christmas music, and he's playing his clarinet, and he's like, "Try it! It's like, you can't just play a clarinet. It's really hard to get that technique down." Like, yeah, here he's
you
like.
Play,
he's,
you play?
He's suddenly showing off to be like, look how good I am. Why don't you try? It's so fucking good.
No.
His story, by the way, that he tells her, it's something like he's like, yeah, like we left my son a funeral home parlor and couldn't find him for hours. And you know, eventually it turned out okay, but he wasn't that scarred about it. And I'm thinking to myself, like, is this the backstory to My Girl? What the fuck's like? It's like pretty
it's
much
a weird
the same
alternate universe.
Yeah. Macaulay Culkin's in that.
I don't like that at all.
And before we leave that airport scene, when Kate is there, have you heard the rumor that a lot of people think that Elvis was in that scene?
I saw that just before I got here.
Dude, the guy standing like two people behind her when she's trying to get her way on a plane in Scranton. Like, for many, many years, fans of Elvis said that is proof that he's alive. He's standing there. And he, like...
Really?
He looks pretty similar to Elvis. And apparently he makes some, like, head gesture that's, like, famous of Elvis and how he moved. And
know.
It was eventually deemed a myth because the real guy that played it was like, I'm not Elvis.
Not Elvis.
That was me. I was just a random extra in the movie. Wow. I always, once somebody tells you that and you like, next time you watch it, look at the guy behind her be able to take your eyes off him.
Yeah. Just like a couple weeks ago when you said like there's hidden elves in Santa Claus, I'm just like, that's fascinating. And I love that shit because like also in like Three Men and a Baby, or something like that. Like the hidden ghosts in the background or like Wizard of Oz, like those movie myths are so much fun.
Oh yeah.
It's fun to like go back.
It's reason
and watch
to go
that.
Back.
Creeps you out. So still, I still get creeped out by these things.
This was a Christmas movie.
So I have to talk about, you know, we talked about, kind of Kevin's growing up phase that he goes through becoming the man of the house, as you say. And he starts doing the shopping. I love like the bags tear out on him, and he goes and gets the eggs and gets the milk.
He's an adult.
And gets
he's got a coupon.
The detergents. He's got a coupon for it. He's being a sensible shopper. And then he goes out with when he gets the toothbrush. He's like, "Is this approved by the American Dental Association?" She's like, "I don't know."
I have no fucking clue.
And she just expects this kid to be like, "All right, well, that's all right." And it's just like, can you find out? Because I,
he's like a Karen.
He's a Karen. He is. He's a bit of a Karen. It's just like, would you please find out? Herb,
we got a question about a toothbrush. But also fuck those people. Help this kid out.
Yeah, well,
like know more about your store and your products.
Yeah, when he's walking away and she's like, "Sir, you can pay for that up here." You hear Herb say, "Well, just tell him that it is." It's like he says that. He's just a dumb, stupid kid. Like, well, just tell him that it is. He's just like, "Well, I'm not gonna do that, Herb. I'm just."
I got a question about a toothbrush.
Yeah. Hey, kid, you have to pay for that. And then the employee who's trying to get laid 24/7, I imagine, just like, "This is my fucking time to shine."
Yeah.
She's like, "This is all I've been waiting for is to stop a measly little sick kid."
Well, and so this officer's clearly like pulled someone over for a traffic violation. Yeah. He's going to like let that person go to
more
chase
important.
A kid.
Yeah. Oh, this is
a stolen
this
toothbrush.
Is more important. There's
not on
some
my watch.
Rules to be set and some morals to be learned here. And he's going to do his damnedest to make sure they're fed with this goddamn silver spoon. And so this is the problem, though. Like, he walks in there, and by the way, old man Marley walks in, right? Kind of rude, old man Marley. This man was clearly waiting at the desk at the checkout, and you just cut him off.
And like came across his body and slammed his bloody hand
his
out
bloody
of him.
Mitt right down in front of him. Like, dude, that's rough.
What are you doing, man?
And then he just stares him down. That's a real alpha move right there.
Hey, I mean? I don't want to spoil it, but we got Mike's fan theories coming up later.
Mike's fan theories.
So don't you worry about that. Apparently that's our new
don't you
Mike's
worry
fan
about
theories. Wait, do that again. We're gonna sample that.
Don't you worry about a thing.
Mike's fan. And samples.
I'm Sean.
Sorry, Mike's fan theories. Samples.
Apparently,
we're gonna make that into a real cool stinger. Yes.
Apparently, Macaulay Culkin on that day, he had like a 2 weeks off or something like that for the entire shoot, and he was deathly sick. And this is one of the only on film of him that's like really sick. This is like they couldn't get around him being off for this day. They had to have him or something like that. So if you go back and look at the movie too, his eyes are bloodshot. He's like really pale, and he had to run and shit like that. I can't imagine for a little kid.
Jeez, dude. One thing I thought about as an adult, when Kevin orders the pizza and like the scary scene, like you talked about earlier, where he plays back the movie, very smart, he had to practice that for hours.
Apparently the audio system was just like
amazing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So much bass, but like clearly the pizza guy believed it. Right.
Yeah.
So why did he not call the cops? Some guy literally shot a machine gun at him while he was
no kidding.
Why did he just like go, "Well, no big deal."
Maybe little Nero's is in like a pretty bad part of Chicago.
Rough part of town as it is. They didn't make it out the suburbs very often.
He was kind of happy to go out to the suburbs, just be like, and then just reality hits him right back in the face. He's like, "Well, you know, I'll run. I won't call the cops."
Yeah. This is one of those scenes that was scary to me because of the way it was shot, like outside the cold snow. And it's that shitty snow. It's that hard snow to walk in. That's like crunching and like it's wet and like kind of, it's so tough to get around in. And you're just like, it's very gritty. Like it looks very gritty out there that you're like snow getting driven through and he's hitting that jockey statue.
Everyone hits the jockey
four times.
It's just so like, this is one of those scenes that you're just like, when I was a kid, I was like, oh my gosh, it's crazy. It's like, wait, he's not shooting at him. Oh, but he's like running for his life. Something about that really creeped me out.
I also love the fake out that he does when the Wet Bandits realize that he is home alone.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And he does iconic. He does it's not Chuck Berry, that's earlier in the it's one of the famous Christmas songs. Rocking around the Christmas tree. That scene with all of, like, the mannequins and like
pretty
Michael
awesome.
Jordan swinging by the camera.
Brenda Lee, that's what it is.
Yeah, okay. He's got a lot of screen time, Michael Jordan does in this movie.
He does. He's got a lot. I wonder if they had to pay for that. That was in the budget of the $17 million.
That's probably what it was. He was like, especially back then, I remember my cousin living in Illinois and us going to visit him had that same.
Oh, yeah. Everybody had
that. Like, there was a measurement by him, to see how tall you were compared to him and shit like that. Like, Chicago Bulls were on fire then.
So also think about that scene, though. Kevin basically had to start. He could have been doing that for like 5 hours.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's true.
How did he know when they were going to show up?
Yeah,
the
only time he knew is when they're like, we're going to go back at 9 o'clock, but that's later.
That's later. Yeah. So like, he just said, well, for the next 10 hours, I'm going to dance to this song.
Those mannequins creep me out.
Yep.
They creep me the fuck out. Yep. That one that's like at the table, like doing like the whole like the weird thing, like moving back and forth. You're just like, that's incredibly creepy.
He did some interior decorating too, and he didn't have to whatsoever.
No, not at all.
Like, he set up a legit tea party for him. He's like, well, I mean, I guess he had 10 hours. Yeah.
He might be going crazy at this point, honestly, because he's been alone. He's been separated for so long. It's very plausible. I mean, we've all experienced it in 2020, so.
We understand, Kevin.
The last thing I wanted to say is Kate is trying to get back to Kevin. She hustles this older couple out of their ticket, and she trades them.
All right.
She's like, oh, and that lady is hilarious. By the way, I don't know her name, but she is so funny as a character. And like, so she offers up though 2 first class tickets on Friday if they leave on Friday. $500, a pocket translator, jewelry, and the earrings. Do you like the earrings?
And the watch.
And the watch, And all these things. So I looked up just to get some face value on this stuff. Just to see
how much of Peter's money she was just throwing around. Just
throwing this stuff away. Pocket translator had to be somewhere close to a $100 bill.
Okay,
this might
be a pickleball moment for me.
Yeah.
What the fuck is a pocket translator?
So they were going to France and they
Google Translate.
Speak into it.
See, I have an iPhone.
Right, correct.
I would know about that.
There you go. Pickleball, you bitch.
That's from episode 1 or 2 for you new listeners.
So and so pocket translator, these first class tickets, which it's got to be at least a grand, like on the she's going from Scranton
to Chicago.
Yeah,
so we'll call it a grand.
Call it a grand for the 2 tickets. $500, which the buying power of $500 in 1990 was $996, almost $1,000.
Fuck. You know how
there you go. Like, that's the money she's throwing at this.
Dude, right how now. Many times have you been in the airport where they go, well, our flight's full today and we're offering, and they start throwing first class tickets for later today and vouchers. Like, how many times are you sitting there going, if they hit X number, I'm pulling the trigger on this. That's exactly what that old couple did.
That's 100%. Like, they were about to board and they ended up doing it. But that's like, we're talking about like probably close to $2,000 worth of stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously for a respectable reason, you're trying to get home to your child that you left on your off from your France vacation.
Let's not let her forget about it.
Let's not.
Kate shows up. Kate basically spends $3,000 to arrive 10 minutes before the rest of the family.
I was gonna bring that up later, but I was like, what? I had to ride in this van with these fucking beer-ridden, stinky, fat people playing polka the entire time with one very sweet man who's the best man in the entire world.
The greatest man in the world.
Which made it worth it, but fuck you. What the?
So perfect.
Oh, I was like, what?
And they did. They caught the flight that was they were supposed to be on Friday.
You know,
Friday.
The one that we told you to wait for?
They walk in seconds later.
Yeah. Not even 10 minutes. It's like,
Five.
It's like 6 minutes, 6.5 minutes that they get alone that she might have been waiting in the house.
These are the things you think of as adults upon rewatching these classic movies as a kid. All right, so let's move along. So on Christmas Eve, Kevin overhears Harry and Marv discussing plans for breaking into his house that night. After conversing with a Santa Claus impersonator and watching a local choir perform at a church, he comes across old man Marley. The two of them talk, and he learns that Marley is in fact a very nice man, and the rumors about him are not true. He tells Kevin he is watching the choir because his granddaughter is in it, and he never gets to see her because he and his son have not spoken in years. After a big argument that they had, Kevin advises him to reconcile with his son. Just not a huge scene here, but like kind of pivotal. It sort of switches the mood around, and like each character now knows what they need to do, sort of a thing. You know?
I love this scene so much. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I do too. I was just gonna say, like, I think it's a very moving scene that you get to meet this man, and obviously this is it's a theme into the second one too. But you know, misjudging people and creating full on stories about people of that you don't know. And he gets to have this wonderful, warm conversation with this person and even advises him to do that. And, like, you know, it's really nice to see these two sides of the spectrum, that he's at odds with his family, and he advises him that he's at odds, this old man is at odds with his family.
They're not too different whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. And so you kind of see these two worlds collide. And then, by the way, if there's ever been a closer reference to Billy Madison saying sorry for making fun of you in high school, it's a good thing he reconciled, because man, I'm glad I found that guy in church. It's like, so we'll get
pretty
there,
good.
But hey,
pretty good question. I mean, like, he has a loving family, and his story was really sweet, but he could still be a serial killer.
He could still use that shovel the way God intended. All right,
just wait for Mike's fan theory.
Oh man, one quick thing. I want to get to that scene. Yeah. Yeah. But one quick thing, Chris Farley auditioned to be that Santa Claus.
Could you imagine?
Oh, man.
Just another little itty bitty cameo.
He would have gotten the part if he wasn't drunk as fuck. Yeah. Apparently, he was like extremely hungover and like just like couldn't even spit out any of the lines or anything. Literally spit out the lines. You couldn't even do that. But that would have been perfect. Like John Candy and Chris Farley, just like seeing those two like back to back. I would be like,
amazing.
This is the best movie in the entire world.
Dude. And like how great it talking about that scene though, in the church, like that gives off such great Christmas Eve vibes, that Christmas Eve. Like sometimes back when I was younger, we used to go to like a Christmas Eve mass, and when it was dark out, and like, dude, Christmas song sung by a choir, and everybody's happy and in a good mood. That really is a nice place for that scene to happen. It could have happened anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. But the fact that it is in a church, though, is like, that's one thing I do like about religion and church in general, is like it's very communal. Yeah. And that's like, I had notes here that I'm not a very, very religious person, but Christmas Eve church is like one of the best things ever.
100%.
The music, the like performances, really. And I mean, even the sermon is just like, yeah, it's whatever for me, but just like everyone together. And that's what this movie is really saying, especially with this scene, I think, is that Christmas isn't like about Santa or like that much stuff, like the fantasy kind of thing. It's just about people together. It's not even necessarily about Christianity or religion in general. It's just people together and giving, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what this scene really does for me. Robert's Blossom, who actually plays old man Marley, his voice is so soothing.
It is.
Macaulay Culkin's reactions in it are actually genuine, because he was captivated by his voice.
Yeah.
Like, it really like calmed him and soothed him, just like as an audience member does.
Yeah.
For me anyway, I would listen to whatever story that dude had to tell.
Yeah, you bet.
You know, just because like he's, you know, we're just going down there and I got my son. And any voice like that, she's like, down to Cabin Steel and I ripped his head off. I'm like, what was that last part?
Well, how good is it too that he looks absolutely terrified that this towering serial killer comes over him, and then he goes, Merry Christmas. And Macaulay Culkin goes, huh? Like his face is perfect. Wait, what? Did you say Merry Christmas to me?
Yeah, exactly. I have to take it back to the Santa Claus, because I knew I recognized the guy from somewhere. His name is Ken Hudson Campbell. This is the same guy. He plays Max in Armageddon. That's about the only other place you would see him, or maybe really recognize him full on.
He has that's a the lot Santa of, Claus?
That's the Santa impersonator? Claus oh, right. impersonator.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah, and so I was like, I know that guy, and I had to look it up, and that's who he is. He plays Max in Armageddon. You can look that up, yeah. his role. But this is one of those places that, so many jokes going over your head, because I love how he says, I know you're not the real Santa. I know how it works. He's like, yeah. He's like, but I know that you work for him. And it's like, wait a second. He's
like, you work so for don't him. Know how it works, yeah,
so
Kevin.
You don't know how it works. And he's like, I love how he like, how confused must this guy be, first off, that he's just rattling off all the names. I want my family back. Did this guy, like, did he, like, survive a family crash or something? Like, he's, like, just tearing his heart out here at this guy in front of this Pinto. And you're just like, all right. And he's like, I got a party I got to get to. And then, like, the other thing's like,
are you going to go home and change?
I don't have any more candy canes for him. My elf took him back to her boyfriend.
I was also disappointed that that girl had a boyfriend. I was like, damn.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Santa probably was too. But he pops out some Tic Tacs and he says, don't ruin your dinner. And I was like, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, dope. He's like handing him candy and stuff. And I found out they're Tic Tacs. They were like the green mint ones.
Yeah, nobody likes those.
Yeah.
Orange ones or go home.
Thank you.
The Santa's helper, the woman or whatever, she plays a flight attendant in the second one.
Isn't that crazy?
Apparently. Really? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Weird little alternate world
everybody.
There.
Yeah. Boy, they really know their casting.
All right, so let's get into the meat of it. Kevin leaves the church to go home and booby trap his house. Harry and Marv break in and fall victim to every trap in the house. Kevin flees to the second floor of the house and dials 911. They chase him, and he flees to a vacant neighboring home. The wet bandits catch him when he runs to the top of the stairs. Right as they are about to hurt Kevin in what will turn into a horror movie, old man Marley sneaks up behind them, knocks them out with a snow shovel, and takes Kevin home shortly after the two burglars are arrested.
After everything they've been through in this entire scene, which we'll get to, a shovel to the back of the head.
Yeah, that's what knocks them out.
You got to be kidding me. No, a paint can wouldn't take off their fucking head. A spider. I mean, yeah, well, let's get into it.
Blowtorch to I mean, like, what they endure is no person should endure. No. Nor could they get. They don't look like they're in the best shape or, like, yeah. like physically fit. You know, like, how did they make it through that?
Right.
And I do like before this, like him setting up everything. Yeah. It's like the Mannheim Steamroller music in the background. It's like with John Williams, like version of it or whatever. But everything that he sets up is paid off. Like, you're like, I wonder what that would do.
He
I wonder
perfectly what that would knows do. What's going to happen.
Yeah. And like, well, even as an audience member, it's just like, oh, that looks like what ooh, what the fuck is going to happen? What are the paint yeah. cans for? They pay it off. Like everything that they show, it happens to them.
Yeah.
Do you also find it impressive that when he leaves the church, the bells toll 8, so it's 8 p.m. Mm. They show up at 9 o'clock. He did all of the, he set up
all
of that
in an hour
and had time to make dinner.
Marie Callender's fucking mac and cheese. It does look really good.
It does look really good.
I was so sad that he had to leave.
I know.
The full glass of milk
he ate it at the
yeah,
end.
He got it eventually, as long as there wasn't feathers all over it. You know?
There was also a subtle thing that I just noticed this time when he's running to get home, the three automatic house lights turn on
in the same
order that it did when they were the wet bandits. That was pretty cool. I never noticed it.
Definitely.
Continuity, consistency. Yes. Super important.
When they first get up to the door, Joe Pesci, I think they're both at the back door, and he's just sitting there ready with his BB gun. The shot of Marv sticking his head through the through the dog hole and just lifting it up like, hi.
Hello.
Just gets smoked right between the eyes. Holy shit. To start off what was probably going to be the least of his punishment.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, and I like I say, what if that went in, if that went into one of his eyes? He's blind. He's wearing an eye patch, man. Like that's it. That's end game right there. Harry goes around the front, and by the way, when they get arrested, he's got that M burned into his hand. How long has he been looking at that he is just pissed about this kid? Like, boy, some scars never heal, eh, boys?
Stewing there in prison? Holy shit.
What was that? I have to ask this, because I couldn't figure it out. What is that he puts on the doorknob?
Apparently, it's like a, I was just reading this before I got here. It's like a grill lighter, pretty much.
Okay.
But it's like a extremely hot iron that they, like, practically it's like nothing.
Yeah.
Like in the movie or in real life. But they took it from like a grill, and it's just like what heated up the grill or something.
It's
like that.
I think it's like an electric grill. We used to have that where it was like you could grill hot dogs on it, and those type of things were inside of it just plugged into the wall.
Okay, because he pulls it off of the grill. Thing.
Yeah,
but I just never knew. I was like, "What is this thing?" Like, so I was like, "All right, well, I went along with it." I was like, "I guess this works."
So it just adds to like the cartoon nature of their punishment and like the acme-ness of it all.
Yeah,
because
that
looks like something out of like why. Wile E. Coyote.
No, it's absolutely.
Like, oh yeah, a steaming hot iron thing.
Yeah,
yeah, that exists in the Looney Tunes world for sure. You know, and I love the aspect of like everything is way out over the top,
completely.
like their performances are, and goes to show how much I miss cartoons like that because they kind of got rid of those things because they were too violent for the kids.
Gotta watch out!
It's so funny though because it's fucking fake. Like,
it's
come
fake.
On,
fake. It's a movie. What of all the things that happen to them? What's the one that makes you like hurt the most? You know, like when you see it, you go, ugh.
I can tell you.
Which one?
We want to go at the same time.
Okay.
Same
time. So I'll say 1, 2, 3, and then you say it. Okay. So ready? 1, 2, 3.
Marv
nail
stepping
on the
oh, okay.
Nail on the foot? Is that what you were going to say?
I was going to say Marv stepping on the glass.
The Christmas ornaments?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm with Sean. I'm on Sean's camp of this. That nail
just
no,
goes right
thank
in.
Thank you. I can feel it right now.
Yeah. We were talking earlier. We were actually watching it a little bit earlier. And like before he reacts, also the testament to like the editing and directing and everything like that. It starts off with like just a sock. The shot starts off
perfect.
With just one sock missing.
No, pans. The shoes, then the sock.
Yeah, exactly. And it pans up to his one of his feet coming out of the sock, and then the next step is just like extreme. That nail goes in so fucking deep and makes me cringe every time.
It has to have an exit wound on it, man.
Oh,
it's got to have like an exit wound on that thing. And he just...
And he keeps going. Like at some point you figure these guys go, fuck this. This is not worth it.
As
but they
say,
keep going.
This is their silver tuna.
Silver tuna. That's the one, Marv.
This is the
silver
one.
Tuna.
This is... There it is, Marv. And he just...
That's the one, Marv.
There it is. And he's just like... They're calling this out. And I love when they're in the other house and Marv is just destroying these like nice things for no reason.
Will you he's fucking
just,
keep it down.
He's
over there?
Like, he's like, you're one of the greatest cat burglars around. He's just like, aren't you? Would you keep it down? Just smashing through stuff while he's wearing like a scuba like mask.
The worst.
But then, yeah, you think like, When is enough enough? Like, I mean, obviously these guys must not have health insurance, but like, what? Come on, like, you got to give up at some point, right? When is the juice worth the squeeze?
It's and one of the second ones I think that was worse was the crowbar to the chest.
Yeah,
that Harry that Marv
right
gave
to the
Harry
goddamn sternum
right during the spider. But so I heard a myth all along, and we finally figured it out that I heard the myth that Daniel Stern. Like silently does that scream when the tarantula's on his face. And then they redo the scream in post.
Right.
But okay. He has admitted that he actually did belt that out on set. Mm-hmm. And he was assured by animal handlers that tarantulas do not have ears.
Do not have ears. Yeah.
And which is completely false. And he said the tarantula's poison was said to have been extracted, and it was not. It was all confirmed recently by Stern that he's like, no, I did it. And like, wow, that's terrifying.
I think it's the best movie scream next to Laura Dern in Jurassic Park.
Damn.
Like, straight up the best. Like, hers is like genuine terrifying, you know, scream, seeing a fucking T-Rex. His is completely... warranted, like you would scream like that, but it's so fucking funny.
It's cartoony. Oh, gosh,
it is like, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-y! You know, like fucking Three Stooges are pretty much. It's so good.
Well, you notice how the music goes and then it stops right as he starts
at every gag. It does that. It's so clever because that's what like Looney Tunes and Three Stooges and slapstick comedy does is like it's. And it goes to show that all of these, I think the stunt coordinator was saying that these were written in the script, and they also had like some leeway as to like when they got on set they could set it up like that. But the stunt coordinator was saying that every torture device, pretty much. Every gag had a three-beat buildup.
Cool.
Like, it showed it.
It was perfect.
It showed it and built it up, and then, like, showed, like, what might happen, and then it showed what happened. And the music compensates for that, too. The music, like, will build up, and then silence with the gag.
Yeah.
And then pay off, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, it's a huge team effort, like, everybody working together, but that sound engineering, the sound design of it all is just, it just adds so much, obviously.
Yeah, he amped it up too. Chris Columbus amped it up, like all like the Foley work, like meat slapping and shit like that. Like they amped it up. They put it in the score.
Oh my God.
All right, so final scene, Kevin wakes up the next morning and is disappointed to see that his family is still gone. He then hears Kate enter the house calling for him. He goes downstairs and the two of them meet and reconcile. Immediately after, the rest of the McAllisters, having traveled directly from Paris to Chicago, arrive. Kevin keeps silent about his encounter with Harry and Marv. He then goes over to the window and sees Marley greeting his son and his family. As he is hugging his granddaughter, he looks up to see Kevin. He waves at him, and Kevin waves back, smiling. He watches as Marley heads inside with his family.
Yes.
Nice little wee. And it's beautifully snowing.
Oh, yeah. And his smile with, like, the snow outside, like, through the window, it looks exactly like that Campbell's commercial with the snowman melting.
Yeah.
Completely. I thought it was him, like, in the commercial as a kid, but apparently that ending was tacked on. They initially wanted to end it where the family came in 10 minutes after each other.
way to go.
Family came in and he's like, what have you been up to? He's like, oh, just hanging out. And they were going to freeze frame on his
no
face.
No way.
That was it. I was like, ugh.
Yeah, but then they didn't do that.
Yeah, they added the heartwarming stuff with Marley at the end, which is just superb.
Yeah, I agree. Mom shows up. They have their moment. That's all they have time for, and everybody rolls in, and you're just like, it's just like chaos ensues again with 13 other people descending into this house again. God, it's just obnoxious.
After they greet him too, they immediately go to a different room. They go somewhere else. They leave him alone again.
Yeah. They don't give a shit.
No.
Like, they don't care at all.
You left him here. He's been home for two, three days, something like that.
Yeah. He bought milk and fabric softener.
He had to fend for him. He stole your money. He had to fend for himself, and you leave him alone.
Yep.
Even if you're in the same house, you fucking keep him in your goddamn sight. What is your problem?
So let's assume that all the chaos ended around like midnight. And let's assume that they arrived at 8 in the morning.
Right.
That means Kevin had to clean up that entire house. Like, that house was
a disaster.
Yeah, and he leaves. Like, he had to get tar off the basement steps. There was feathers. Could you imagine picking up? How do you clean up feathers that are everywhere?
Yeah, if you got a Bissell, I mean, I think Dirt Devil will do it. You know?
Don't you think the door handle would have been burnt? Like, when they walked in, they're like, what happened to the door? There was probably a very strong smell of burnt hair throughout the entire house.
Yeah. Absolutely.
From blowtorches and stuff. Uh-huh. Nobody, maybe they dealt with that soon after. I don't know. Maybe he didn't clean the house.
They're lucky he even showered, too. Like, with two stinky robbers, I imagine, and that stinky boy who just didn't shower because there's no one home. That's what I would have been doing.
Yes.
Like, damn.
But that house is gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Spotless as they left it.
I don't understand. Yeah. I forgot about Buzz's little moment in Paris. I believe he says, one, I never get that lucky.
He says, A,
I never get that lucky. Two, we have smoke alarms. And D,
we live on the most boring street in America.
Yeah. D.
That is class. And that went right over your head as a child.
Yeah,
probably,
yeah,
right?
100%. Yeah.
That whole delivery is so good.
He says, this time he finally caught it in the butt.
Yeah. And he's just pissed about his room. And he's just like Kevin's got, what's Kevin going to say? Is he busted at that point? Like, I don't know.
Well, they kind of show that, like, Buzz is clearly a teenager. Yeah. He's got, like, a Letterman's jacket on kind of a thing. So he's so far away from Kevin in age at this point that they definitely still hate each other.
Definitely. Yeah,
totally.
All right, so here's my fan theory. You ready?
Mike's fan theories.
Don't you worry about a thing.
I'm Sean.
Old Man Marley was actually the South Bend Shovel Slayer. Okay?
Oh.
He actually was. This is why his son and granddaughter never came around. Like, they couldn't prove it, but they knew. And they're like, I can't bring my granddaughter around you. But, you know, like, he's old now and he like feels remorse. So this is why he was finally able to like shed that terrible serial killer thing.
Maybe they like thought it was him, but like, yeah, they weren't sure. But like, cops kind of suspected him, and that was enough for the family to leave.
And so he's able to be like, guys, I wasn't, even though he was. As evident, notice how old man Marley did not stick around when the cops showed up.
Ooh.
Old man Marley took Kevin home and went into his house and never had anything. So like, right, old man Marley's been hiding out for a while. He is the South Bend Shovel Slayer.
Right. And by all the cops know is that Kevin knocked him out because he punished him so much.
Yeah. Well, and Kevin, they don't even know Kevin was a part of that. That's true. They were just there. They were just knocked out in this house with running water. Oh, yeah. So they have no clue what happened.
If he was smart and wanted to be done with the life as a serial killer, he could have pinned it on them.
Maybe he did, dude.
Left a garbage can. That's Marvin Harry talk about that. Well, hey, if there is a killer, if there was a murderer, then we could pin it on him. It'd be good to have a face to the.
Marley took off, dude. Yeah. He didn't want anything to do with that.
That's right.
South Bend Shovel Slayer.
I think these Mike's theories have been pretty solid so far.
These are airtight, guys. Airtight.
So what's the final rating upon further rewatch, deep dive, AJ? What do you give this thing?
I'm giving this an 8.2.
Damn, dude.
I'm going 9.5.
Nine and a half.
I think it's a fucking masterpiece. It's a great Christmas movie. It's a great movie in general. You could watch it not on Christmas. Technically, it's fucking awesome. The script is impeccable. The directing is great. The choices, the lighting. I didn't even really talk about the lighting is amazing. Like what you were saying with the timed lights on the houses, but making like the Midwest look like the Midwest because they shot in Chicago. But I like that aspect of it too. As a kid, I felt like I wanted to do all that. And it's just a great, great, funny slapstick movie.
This is Christmas. Christmas movies for me are not Santa related. They are vibe, emotion, situational related. This has nothing to do with Santa Claus, which is why it's still so great to me. I'm taking it down from a 10 to a 9 just because it's still a Christmas movie. I'm not gonna watch it in July.
Yeah,
that's the only reason. If this was just a regular movie, I'd stick with the 10. Down to a 9.
Right on.
So what do you think about that, boys?
Oh,
I love it.
All right, well,
good for me.
For everybody playing along at home alone,
you're just the best, man. You're just
join us in 2 weeks when they have a new host, and I am no longer available on this podcast. We're gonna be finally diving in. We did one of Sean's picks, one of AJ's picks before we got into Christmas movies, but we're jumping into Mike's pick. Ralph Macchio, Oscar winning performance. Did you know he won an Oscar for that?
I did not.
Ralph Macchio won an Oscar
for his performance in Karate Kid.
What the fuck? I know Pat Morita was nominated.
I'm completely joking. He did not win an Oscar.
Son of a.
I'm like, but I would know this.
But it is the best.
Get behind me.
And when you're gearing up for Cobra Kai season 3, watch some Karate Kid, carve some time out, join us for episode 7. AJ, take us out.
Guys, you have to keep telling everyone about our podcast to give us 5-star reviews. You have to do it on iTunes, Apple Podcasts for the new stuff. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Castbox, Stitcher, all the fun places and platforms that you could listen to a podcast. We're there. And you should review us on the platform that you're listening to us on. Make sure you're writing those reviews. We don't want anything other than 5 stars. 5 stars. If you're going to take the time, give us 5 stars. 5 stars. I'll say it one more time. 5 stars.
5 stars.
Other than that, make sure you join in on every conversation that we ever try to start. It's on Facebook. It's on Instagram. We are at Confused Breakfast. And then on Twitter, it is at Confused Be Fast.
Right on. You can find me at Ralph Macchio was snubbed on Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
Find some videos on Facebook if you like.
You can find me anywhere on social media, AJAYVENS. It's AJ Venz anywhere on social media.
And I am Mike at South Bend Shovel Slayer Conspiracy Theories.com. I like this new segment.
Follow the Reddit.
There's a subreddit. It's real good stuff. So, all right. Well, we love you guys. Thanks for tuning in. We will see you next time.
Okay, bye. Christmas.
Merry Christmas. You're right. Yeah.
Merry Christmas, Kevin.
Merry Christmas.
A weenie whistle.
Bye.